Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY22 earnings conference call of United Breweries Limited, hosted by Investec Capital Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Harit Kapoor from Investec. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Margaret. Good evening, all. We'd like to welcome you to the Q3 FY22 call for United Breweries. From the management in United Breweries, we have Mr. Berend Odink, CFO, and Mr. P.A. Poonacha of Finance and Investor Relations. I'll now hand over the call to Berend for his opening remarks, post which we will take the lines of Q&A. Over to you, Berend.
Thank you, Harit, and good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining the results call today. I'm joined by Mr. Poonacha, and after the usual opening comments, we'll be happy to take any questions. Let us dive straight in and turn to the results highlights for the quarter. We posted volume growth of 19% for the quarter versus prior year, driven by continued recovery of demand prevalent across nearly all markets. Versus the preceding quarter, there was a 10% sequential volume growth. In the quarter, there was a full recovery of volume levels versus pre-COVID. UBL achieved share growth both in the quarter as well as the year-to-date performance, thereby further solidifying market leadership. Gross margin during the quarter was lower by 390 basis points and lower by 178 basis points compared to the preceding quarter. The quarter was thereby impacted by inflationary pressures in packaging materials as a result of general market commodity increases, partly offset by positive price and product mix. The EBITDA reached 180 crores with 11.4% margin for the quarter, impacted also by higher marketing investments to drive demand recovery. Excluding some non-recurring items, the margins were at 13.6%. The overall liquidity position is very strong with about 800 crores of bank balance. In the quarter, the company repaid all remaining term debt. On page four and five, it depicts the Q3 and year-to-date results. For the year-to-date, the net sales is up 53%, and year-to-date EBITDA reached 451 crore, up 188% from 157 crore in prior year. On the performance by region, North posted strong growth at 35%, particularly in UP and Rajasthan. In Delhi, there was single-digit growth due to the policy changes in the state. West posted 11% growth and East 12%. South posted 19% volume growth with a number of differences among states. The good volume growth was posted in Telangana, Andhra, and Kerala, while Karnataka and Tamil Nadu volumes were flattish, impacted among others by poor weather. Turning to net sales, this was up 23% in the quarter, driven 19% by volume and some 3% favorable price mix. Again, partly offset by unfavorable state mix. On page eight depicts the EBITDA breakdown. There was a gross profit improvement in absolute terms, but a lower gross profit margin due to the earlier mentioned commodity inflation, mainly in packaging. Fixed costs showed a good leverage effect of revenue growth coming through. And third, the quarter was impacted by higher marketing investments to drive demand recovery, for which we have seen strong share performance. The quarter saw some non-recurring items, 15 crore for doubtful debtors taken as a cautionary provision, and 21 crore for restructuring costs, as in the quarter, the company reviewed its organizational structure to ensure it is lean, efficient, and future-ready in light of the rapidly evolving market circumstances. Excluding these non-recurring items, EBITDA margin also was 13.6%. and to share an update on the portfolio where we continue to invest to rejuvenate and expand it. We've launched a new digital identity of Kingfisher that is being rolled out nationally and met with great initial consumer feedback. Ultra expanded its offering in the on-trade with Ultra Draft launched in Maharashtra. Whitbeer is now available in 9 states, and for Amstel, it expanded its footprint to UP and Mumbai as new markets. In the quarter, we saw that the overall premium portfolio growth was ahead of the total portfolio of the company. Finally, on outlook and summary, so with the new COVID wave prevalent in India, we continue to focus on health and safety for employees and stakeholders, while ensuring continued focus on cost actions and working capital management. Although the COVID trajectory is unknown, the company is confident in successfully navigating the current uncertainty with leadership position, strong brand portfolio, and healthy financial position. As always, we continue to be optimistic about the long-term growth drivers of the industry on the basis of GDP growth, urbanization, and evolving consumer trends, where we are well positioned to leverage and drive these opportunities. With that, I would like to conclude the opening comments and move to the Q&A part. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who would like to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Avnish Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on the cost side, so gross margin, severe pressure, QOQ and YOY. On glass bottles and corrugated boxes, are you able to do anything proactive either in terms of, say, using more older bottles or thickness, lesser thickness in corrugated boxes? And second, from the states, are you getting any feelers on when you can get the price rise, any of the states or already something is in the advanced state?
On the first question, yes, absolutely. So we are continuing all kinds of cost actions. So that includes some corrugated materials, switching some of the materials to cheaper versions, while, of course, ensuring the durability. On glass, although that's not the main driver for the input cost increase we saw for the quarter, but also on glass, we are taking actions to change some of the colors, look at increased levels of collections, etc. So those actions have been taken and we'll definitely continue on those actions. On the pricing side of your question, we continue the dialogue, of course, with many of the states. I would say it's not a one-off dialogue where we take price, but it's a continuous one. As of now, it's a bit too early to comment on that more, but of course, we always strive for balanced price increases that, of course, are now once we have reached the full volume recovery and we have seen the commodity cycle, of course, in the last few months. Topic of pricing is, of course, becoming more and more important. Absolutely.
So that's helpful. In Q4, do you expect more sequential pressure? So glass and say, corrugated boxes, is Q4 looking a bit more challenging versus Q3 from a cost perspective?
I don't want to start with giving guidance, but as I said, we of course look at pricing actions where possible, not only next quarter, but also Q1 of the next financial year. With that, we also continue the cost actions on the input cost. And hopefully with that, we get that margin a bit up. And I think I always said that you shouldn't look too much individual in the quarter at the gross margin given the setup of the pricing restrictions in the industry. But as we look back to previous commodity cycles, we have been able to recover always the margins, and I'm confident we'll do that the same time now.
So my second question is on the marketing investment and the branded retail outlet. So that means Pernod, which is not a direct competitor, but in the broader same space. Pernod is looking at branded retail outlets in India. So what would be your thought process on this? And second, marketing investment, you called out that you have put in more. Yeah, you have done a spectacular recovery versus the 2 years also on volume. But on the overall intensity in terms of ad spend, is it going higher because of the PE funding coming to some of the startups?
On the retail side of it, definitely we continue to invest. I think we have probably a bit of a different proposition than the company you refer to. But we are very active with displays, with promotion materials, with signages, etc., in the various outlets, and that's a strategy that we will continue. In the ad spend part of your question, I don't think that has come down or increased significantly. I think that is relatively probably on the same pace. Where we have invested a bit more is particularly on the on-trade side of the business to support the startup and the opening. Also, with the on-trade much more open versus Q3 of last year, we really wanted to drive it as well, and hence we have allocated some of the spends in the on-trade in the quarter.
And last quick question, so doubtful debtor of 15 crores, is that government CSD? Could you elaborate that?
So it's not a government doubtful debt provision. It's related to an entity where we have a legal dispute, and as a cautionary step, we took that provision. Of course, the dispute itself will continue, and we look to pursue that with a lot of vigor, but it's not a government entity, no.
So that's very helpful. That's all from my side. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Krishnan Sambamurthy from Motilal Oswal Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Varun. My questions are one on commodity cost and on the on-trade impact. While you did highlight the packaging cost, what's the YOY inflation that you are seeing on barley cost? And that is also important to note that since you procure barley for the rest of the year, in the beginning of the year, how do you see barley cost panning out over the course of the next couple of months?
On barley, we have not seen that much price changes this quarter because we continue with existing stocks from last year's crop. So the new pricing, it's a bit too early. We'll have to see towards March, April, when the crop is really coming to the market with enough depth and liquidity in the market as to what is the quality, what is the quantity, and hence the pricing around that. So it's too early to tell, but at least for the current quarter, we have existing stocks, and that's part of the pricing as you have seen in this quarter's results.
But market prices prevalent are up in double digits, right? So in case of market, while it may not have impacted your own cost for the quarter.
Yeah, so I think some of the spot trading is indeed up, but those prices are not yet prevalent for us as we continue with existing stock positions. And I think the real pricing indicators, I think, are around March to April, because at the moment it's more nominal volumes that are traded.
Got it. My second question is on the extent of on-trade sales impact in January. Can you just call that out and what's the outlook here?
Well, in January, we've definitely seen some impact in particularly, I would say, the the urban areas. So a number of cities had evening curfews, limiting seating capacity, or a few instances where on-trade was closed. At the same time, of course, this COVID rate is very different from earlier. We've also seen, even up to today, some of these restrictions being rolled back. So it's too early to conclude on the impact, but hopefully the impact is more much more limited than we would have seen earlier.
Got it. Thanks for that.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prateek Ramlekar from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. If you could just let us know what is the recovery level of reused bottles that you're seeing this quarter? And I understand that in January you've had some more impact on on-trade, as you just mentioned, but maybe if you could give us a sense on December versus last December, how does that level look for reused bottles?
Yeah, the reused bottles we have seen more or less normalcy in this quarter, so a lot of the recovery of the market also coincided with normalization of the different cycles and the participants in the collections. So normally we are the kind of one-third new bottle injection, and we were more at that number for the quarter. If I understood your second part of the question was on trade in January?
Yeah.
Yeah, so for the other question, there was certainly some impact, particularly in the bigger city areas like Mumbai, Bangalore, Delhi. At the same time, a number of those restrictions in terms of weekend curfew or earlier closing hours have been also partly rolled back. So with that, yeah, we would expect some impact still in February. But let's see how it will develop. I mean, it's ongoing as we speak, so it's a bit too early to conclude on it. But in summary, some impact, but definitely, of course, not to the extent that we saw in the earlier wave of COVID.
Thanks for that. And just one last question from my side. Maharashtra government has issued some sort of a notification allowing wine sales through regular grocery channels. So as we understand, there used to be a combined license for wine and beer earlier. So this GTM cleaning up is, as of now, and as per your knowledge, is only for wine or does it apply to beer as well?
So my understanding that this announcement only applies for wine. So that's the news I have.
Okay, thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Desai from MCA Global Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Darren. Thanks for taking my question. Our losses in non-alcoholic beverages have almost doubled. When do we expect it to stabilize?
Hi, Ashish. Yes, the losses there are partly, of course, operational of the NAB portfolio that we have and we continue to invest in, but also to a certain extent it is advertising of, for example, Heineken 00 that we do, which of course has its spill-on effect on the other variants of the brand. So that is also a conscious strategy that we pursue.
Okay. Should we expect this run rate going ahead or will it come back to the, will it be lower as we've seen in the previous quarters?
Yeah, I would expect more the previous quarter trend and of course overall step by step we have the milestones defined for the NAB portfolio, which of course should make it that it's profitable in its own segment, so that's what we pursue.
Okay. And I think your volumes have come back to pre-COVID levels, but your depreciation rates are still lower versus what they were substantially. Is this due to lower number of shifts, or there are some fully depreciated capacities also that's driving this?
I'll take this question. Ever since the pandemic started, we have started depreciating our assets. To use the word loosely, more scientifically, what we are doing is we are doing it based on the number of shifts each unit is working at. In the past, it was assumed that all shifts were utilized and all units were depreciated as if they worked on three shift basis, even though there are months that they did not operate on three shift. as a common principle, it was appreciated across units. Ever since the COVID hit the business, we have been depreciating each unit assets based on the number of shifts it is practically used. So thereby the difference.
Okay. But I see quarter on quarter it's more or less similar. So even in Q1 it was a similar run rate. So
It will depend on what are the opening stocks which they carry into the quarter and what are the closing stocks. Net-net, it depends based on the shifts which are being physically run in the various locations.
Okay. So it's... One can say that the depreciation is structurally down and this is the base number that we should look at.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. I'll come back for more in the case. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Alok Shah from Ambit Capital. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on the good set of volume recovery. My first question is on the market share gain. Would you be able to comment whether the current market share of your company would be above the CY19 or FY20 levels?
Yes, the market shares are trending for the year. Last quarter is kind of 64-65%, so that's definitely on the upper end of what we historically used to be, which probably was closer to 52-53. Of course, after the first COVID wave, we've seen a bit of a dip due to all kind of closures, particularly in on-trade, that disproportionately impacted us. So it's good to have now fully recovered it and even be a bit higher than historically was the norm.
Okay, that's great and congratulations for that. My second question is more a strategic one. So your wheat beer is under the brand Kingfisher. Now, of course, you know, while it can have advantages since consumers already know the brand Kingfisher, but on the flip side, do you also reckon that consumers may want a unique craft beer and not something which is kind of generic? So do you, or does your marketing or sales team feel the brand Kingfisher getting attached to wheat beer to be a constraint or a deterrent for some consumers? Or you really don't think because the market share gains in wheat beer is also quite strong? Your thoughts on that? Thank you.
Yes, I think at the end of the day, we are continuing to build a whole portfolio. So partly that is, of course, very much Kingfisher and Kingfisher line extensions, which I think come with a lot of inherent recognition, brand equity, and then strength of the brand and the franchise itself. At the same time, we also have a number of other brands besides Kingfisher, partly, for example, from Heineken International, but also a lot of other local brands that that we have in regional strength. As the market and consumers continue to evolve, definitely I think the number of brands will only increase. So most likely you will see examples both on the Kingfisher and also not on the Kingfisher. And I think that's how that consumers are evolving, and I think that's for us to fight the right propositions in total brand portfolio.
Okay. So just a follow-up to that, basically what you're trying to say is that, you don't see any restraining factor and you seem to be suggesting that the follow-on portfolio that you build potentially in the craft or the wheat beer segment may still have, a brand attached of the existing, one of the existing labels that you already have. Is that understanding correct?
You should also realize that when a consumer goes to an outlet, when he refers to Kingfisher, he does not mean Kingfisher Ultra. Of course, though the bird is there, so the wheat beer is under the Ultra umbrella. And in a consumer's mind, Ultra is the premium segment of Kingfisher. So that volume is small and that signifies premium of our portfolio.
Got it, got it. No, so, you know, essentially what I was thinking also is that, you know, globally when, you know, the incumbents have moved to this craft or, you know, VPR kind of segment, have they tried to use the same brand level and then leverage on that, or they have sought to sort of build a unique thing because consumers resonate to a different name better? So that's where I was essentially moving to from Western experiences. How do you see that?
To my observation on the market in India would be what is a bit different in craft versus maybe US or Europe is that in the US, for example, I think a lot of the craft has also been developed out of a kind of consumer interest to be something which is more local, which is maybe less, you know, mass produced, mass national level. So to distinctly move away from that and have something which is more on a smaller scale, more local, more, let's say, non-mainstream, if you will. I think in India that is less of the case, less against, you know, large corporations or large brands, but it's more about, I think, experimentation, new flavors, new segments. So as such, I think the trends are a bit different. But of course, overall, the number of choices and offerings in the market, I think that will, as I said earlier, only will continue to go up.
Got it. This clearly explains. Thank you very much, and all the best for the next quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nilay Shah from Moon Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So my question is essentially on the input cost. In the last quote on the conference call, Alan has mentioned that costs were pretty much under control. And you cited the fact that barley stock is there, etc. So what has surprised you in terms of the input cost inflation on a quarter-on-quarter basis, given the sharp decline Q-on-Q across barley for this quarter?
Yeah, that's not so much, I would say, an area of surprise. I think, of course, commodity markets develop with their ups and downs from month to month, week to week, etc. But a large portion we have hedged, a large portion we have, let's say, forward visibility with long-term contracts. So it's not a matter of surprise. I think with this quarter, of course, we compare to the prior year, which had a particularly strong growth margin. Secondly, we've seen that we had a bit of negative state mix, which is something, of course, which is less predictable and depends on how the recovery pans out. And thirdly, I think traditionally this quarter is not one where a lot of pricing actions are normally also taken, so we really want to drive also the volume recovery, and now that it's really taken place, I think the next point of emphasis is really more on the pricing side.
Okay. And the second question is, in a having trouble reconciling the volume growth with the net revenues that has been reported for 9 months, has there been some change in the contract manufacturing unit volumes on a year-on-year basis for 9 months?
No, that network and the share of it has been more or less the same. There might always be from time to time small changes, but that would not have driven a meaningful difference in that figure.
Just to confirm this, the contract manufacturing unit volumes, are they reported in the growth numbers that you report for the quarter? When you talk about volume growth for the quarter, does it include the CMU units too?
Yes, it does, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Kumar Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, thanks for the opportunity. My question is it possible for you to give us some more color on cost optimization that you have carried out during the pandemic period, and you know, some comments that in terms of what is the extent of saving that you would sort of realize if FY23 is a normal year versus FY20?
either in terms of EBITDA per case or other costs per case basis or absolute numbers. In employee costs, we can see some correction, we can expect some correction going forward. But other than employee costs, are there other areas where you're seeing significant savings?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So definitely employee costs, of course, given the restructuring that we've done, but it was towards the end of the quarter, so that impact in terms of new run rate, if you will, becomes more visible the next quarter. But if I compare to pre-pandemic and today, I think we have more or less all the P&L line items taken in initiatives with various teams within the company. So that goes from logistics to some of the packaging, to some of the sourcing, to back-end costs, to automation in certain areas. So there's been quite a widespread set of actions that have contributed to the results. Like in the past, I will not really split out how much and in which quarter, et cetera, because in the end of the day, we would look at a set of initiatives, partly, of course, running to the bottom line, partly offsetting inflation in various categories, but partly also, for example, to make sure there are enough resources freed up to invest in the brand portfolio and innovations from time to time. So with that, we will try to balance the effort of cost, but also investments for the portfolio, the market share position, and hence the bottom line profitability.
Understood. And just a clarification on the previous question that was asked on depreciation. So your quarterly depreciation used to be 72.3 crores in FY20. Now it has come down to 50-53 crores. So is the understanding correct that in peak season, the number, let's say in your peak quarter, this number, quarterly depreciation number will go up, but overall basis, it will still be 10-15% below FY20 level?
Yeah, while it will be lower, on an overall basis. The reason being, in the last 2 years, if you see, our CapEx programs have been largely maintenance CapEx, and there's been no major increase in CapEx. Normally, in a normal year, we have somewhere between 350 to 400 crores of CapEx. But however, in the last 2 years, because of the pandemic, there's a limit to approximately 200 crores. So the amount you see in the past prior to the pandemic was about 280 crores per annum, which was equal across four quarters, considering we had an equitable method of doing depreciation three shift across all seasons, across all units. So you saw something between 65 to 70 crore every quarter. However, post the pandemic, we started doing what you said, that is depreciating only based on shift usage. And of course, there is a fall in the additional capex that we are doing the last 20 to 24 months.
And do you foresee any significant increase in capex next year, FY23, or when should we see increase from current levels, FY24? Or?
Yeah, we first we can monitor the upcoming peak season to make sure we have the visibility there and hopefully have the uninterrupted peak season. From there, I think we will assess again the growth outlook and then the need to invest. But as of now, as Kunach indicated, probably this year will end the CAPEX investments well below the 200 crore mark. And then after next peak season, we'll assess again.
Right. Final bookkeeping question. Could you give us an idea what was the A&P spend as a percentage of sales in this quarter, December quarter?
It will be around 5.5%.
Understood. Thank you so much. That's great.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Mehul Desai from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, sir. So just on this market share gains that you have highlighted, you know, 54-55% versus 52-53% pre-COVID, I just wanted to get your sense. Is there any particular state where you are under index or where you had a lower market share compared to your national average and you have gained a significant share there. If you can give some color as to state, I mean, in terms of key states where you have gained more market share and that has led to this 200-300 just higher market share compared to pre-COVID levels.
Yeah, I think broadly across many states it's been a good performance. So all the way from north in Rajasthan, UP, to a number of other markets like Telangana, Goa, West Bengal, Kerala. So yeah, it's not one or two states that there is all a major turnaround or something which drove that number up, but I think pretty broadly across various parts of the country we've seen that performance.
Yes, thank you. That's all.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Himanshu Shah from Dollar Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a good set of numbers. So can you just provide some more color on the organization restructuring that we have done and what kind of savings it should entail in employee costs on a per annum basis? What is the nature of the organization?
The reorganization and the restructuring that we have done was really with a view to look at the evolving market dynamics and demand picture and make sure we have the appropriate resourcing from an organization perspective. For example, in the number of hierarchical lines in the company, the number of teams and functions we have on the various topics. So that has led to redundancy, and of course, we had to say to very valued colleagues, which was not a great process, of course, as such. But I think from a future perspective, it will be well organized with quick decision making. We've seen that the best way forward. As to the number, the savings amount, etc., we'll come back to that more in the next quarter when we see those numbers flow through. But of course, you have seen the one-off impact in terms of restructuring that happened in the latter part of the quarter. But for the next quarter, we will come back more on that.
So secondly, just on the pricing flexibility front from the state governments, various state governments, is there a case that pricing flexibility in beer as a category is slightly more better than IMFL as a category, or would it be similar? Because we have generally seen our price mix on most of the count being on a positive side on a YOY basis, which we have not been able to see in case of IMFL as a category. For some of the players?
No, price flexibility is, it's a very difficult question to answer because when you mean price flexibility, do you mean to say that the spirit companies are not able to price their products differently? Because
they are not able to take on the
premiumization is possible to a larger extent in spirit than in beer. There is a limit to the extent in which you can premiumize beer. So that way there is a flexibility of having several layers of hierarchies for spirits, right from the bottom down right to the top. But at each level, flexibility is purely limited to negotiations with the state government authorities, which is similar to both beer and spirit. So it's not different. The process is the same.
And generally, so if you approach the state governments for price increases, how easily it comes through? Like, it comes through on most of the occasions, and how much time it would be taking? I know it could be varying from state to state, but at a portfolio level, if you could provide some color.
You have to go state by state and see the salience, because in a state like Karnataka, though it is a government corporation, it is far easier. You apply for a price increase and within 45 days it is in place. But in a place like Telangana, I mean, it's not as simple. I mean, you could go on for more than a year negotiating the corporation and the state excise and not get anything. So it depends from state to state, and you'll have to look at it state to state and see an overall sales level.
Sure. And sorry to just add on this, and utilities have applied for price increases now with the upcoming excise season to most of the states, and do we do this on regular basis, like annual price increases?
We have a lot of conversations around price, and of course it is now stepped up given the general inflationary environment, so not only us but I think many industry participants we'll look to recoup some of that via pricing. But as Mr. Spunak just said, some states only allow pricing maybe every 3 or 4 years. So that's a very challenging process. Other states it's a bit more easy. So that is the industry environment in which we operate.
Sure, sir. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question at this time. The next question is from the line of Ashit Desai from MK Global Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Baris, when you say higher investments to drive demand recovery, do these include higher retail spend also?
No, this is mainly related to trade spend, so as I explained earlier, into the on-trade institutions, etc.
Okay, and what would be the reasons for, so when we look at your realizations, they're down on a quarter-on-quarter basis. What could be the reason for that?
So we have noted some positive price mix in the quarter versus prior year, but some negative state mix due to the prevalence, of course, of how the recovery panned out.
Okay. And could you give us some idea how different was, you said for the quarter we reached pre-COVID, but how different was November, December versus pre-COVID?
Yeah, in general, we've seen during the quarter, of course, continued recovery. I would say that in November, probably we were a bit lower due to some poor weather in the south. But barring that, good recovery, and that as a total gave us slightly ahead of pre-COVID volumes. So that's, that was the trend.
Okay, so December was more than 100%.
Yes.
And lastly, can you quantify the price hike given to glass suppliers in Q3?
In Q2 or Q3?
Yeah, during the quarter. In Q2 or Q3, when was this given?
So, no, for us in general, we have long-term contracts, and they work with price adjustment formulas for the majority, meaning if underlying input costs move up or down outside a certain predetermined range, then there will be a trigger on the pricing. So that is how it's, let's say, shared with the suppliers. But for the quarter, I think in glass itself, there were no major movements in glass prices.
So the inflation is largely led by non-glass packaging materials.
Yes, so then you have to think about cans where the aluminium has moved up, but also things like cartons and crowns, etc.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Palak Shah from Infina Finance. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the question. Firstly, on the recent changes in Delhi, Mumbai, Maharashtra, MP. Just wanted to take a competitive view from you. How has been the period for the last 45 days of the quarter? And also including West Bengal, where you have seen price cut for spirits versus movies.
Yeah, so I think each state and area, as you mentioned, has a different kind of background. So in Delhi, of course, there was an impact from, let's say, COVID measures. At the same time, the market, I think, is kind of, you know, stabilizing after the policy change. So a lot of stocking happened in the market. New outlets came operational. So in general, positive trading for Delhi. In West Bengal, we have seen indeed some changes again in the policy, where probably spirits was down in the mid-20s in terms of MRPs, but also beer was down some 10%. As of that, yeah, we've seen good continued trading, although of course it's a bit difficult to distinguish kind of COVID impacts versus policy impacts, but in general, I think with the lower MRPs, it is a good environment. In Mumbai, I think we've seen a bit more impact due to COVID period. So although the online delivery model is active there and continues to see some traction, we have seen, of course, what I said earlier, in urban areas, maybe a bit more of the impact with rural, if I look at the Omicron part of COVID.
Got it. And just on the pricing strand and on the excise policy discussions that are ongoing, how has been the conversation and approach from the state governments within hearing policy from the WS in that work industry? What has been your take? Have they been more accommodative to the discussion?
Sorry, the line is not very good. Could you repeat the question?
Just wanted to ask, how has been the state approach during this current excise policy? Are they more accommodative to the alcohol industry?
I think that's very difficult to say in general. I mean, the discussions are really on a state-by-state level, and they're ongoing, so it's too difficult or too early to say in general that they're more accommodative or not. I mean, I think if I look in the past, yeah, sometimes the external environment, like commodities, is something that is taken into account. At the same time, you've also seen a number of states that would not really change their approach based on those kind of external drivers. So in that sense, it's I don't think possible to give one statement about how excise is taken there into account.
If I just change the question a bit and just ask you which states have been more accommodative in the last 2 years and this year as well for the industry, and versus who have still been more or less the same versus pre-COVID.
Yeah, there are states that are, of course, more conducive in terms of how they look at pricing, but also maybe broader, just besides pricing, also the ease of doing business and the general environment of investments and operations. That is, as Panasha mentioned, states like Karnataka, Goa, maybe Maharashtra, maybe Delhi, West Bengal, there are probably more pricing actions that have been taken, also sometimes policy changes, and at the same time there are states like Telangana, Rajasthan, etc., that are more difficult to obtain prices over a period. But having said that, yeah, the dialogue is on almost everywhere, so that is the effort we do from our side, and that's what we continue to do.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this, and all the best for the report. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Kumar Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Sajid. Just a quick one. What is the breakup of your volumes in terms of cans and glass bottles?
So in cans, the share of the portfolio would be around 15%.
Understood. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question at this time. As there are no further questions from the participants, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Harit Kapoor for closing comments.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret.
On behalf of Investec Capital Services, we'd like to thank all the participants on this call, and we'd also like to thank the management for taking up time on the same. I'd now hand over to Darren for the closing remarks. Over to you, Darren.
So thank all the participants on the call for your interest and questions. Also, Harit and Investec, thank you for hosting us. I hope everybody takes care, stay safe, and look forward to the next interaction.
Thank you. On behalf of Investec Capital Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.